She let out a squeal of embarrassment. "Oh, my God," she said. "It was in the coat." I insisted that Ripper read it to me until I had committed every syllable to memory, said X. "Shut up," said Zoe. "You did not." X cleared his throat. "The minute you left, I realized I loved you," he said. "Crap, I'm already running out of paper." "Stop, stop, stop," she said. They stood smiling and swaying in the water. It was becoming impossible to keep their bodies apart. There was no such thing as close enough. X ran a thumb over her lips. She parted them at his touch. She waited for his mouth to come to her. And it did. When she emerged from the locker room in her street clothes, Zoe saw that X was trembling. Now she knew for certain what she'd already suspected. He hadn't collected his final soul. He had defied the Lords. He had come to her instead. She couldn't imagine what the consequences would be. Under the stark fluorescent lights of the lobby, X began to look afraid. Was he afraid for himself? Or for her? Now she understood why he hadn't wanted to talk. She didn't want to talk either. Instead, she wanted to show him something. But it was far. She didn't know how they'd get there. X understood before she said a word. "Wherever you want to go, I will carry you," he said. Zoe remembered how X had carried her and Jonah home through the woods. At the time, she'd been so out of it that all she remembered was a feeling of immense safety and the sight of the trees pulsing by. X made a basket of his arms now, and she reached around his neck. She felt warmed, protected, enclosed. Her cell phone buzzed. She fished it out of her coat and found a text from her mom. "You ready?" it said. "Should I come get you?" Zoe sank gratefully into X's chest. "No," she texted back. "I've got a ride." And then X launched them into the snowy night. This time the journey in his arms was bumpy and nauseating, and Zoe realized that holding on to a comet seemed really cool until you were actually holding on to a comet. She clung to X's neck, shouting directions. They moved faster than she thought possible. The landscape blurred by, trailing streaks of light. Zoe saw everything in flashes. The snowy ski runs, the dark, twisting river, the thick puffs of smoke that rose out of the trees as if giants were lying on their backs in the mountains and smoking cigars. 100 miles rushed by. Soon, X descended and skidded to a halt, snow swirling everywhere. When they'd finally come to a stop, he set Zoe down with infinite care. She lurched forward and threw up. And then she spent the next 5 minutes trying to get her ears to pop. X was mortified, but Zoe reassured him. It's fine," she said. "I thought it'd be romantic." Zoe had guided him to a deserted spot in the mountains. Only now did she realize that, with the moon locked behind clouds, they wouldn't be able to see a thing. X seemed unconcerned. "Which way are we bound?" he said. "That way," she said, pointing vaguely into the darkness. "I think." X knelt and placed his arms against the snow. A tunnel of light burst in front of them, 10 feet high and 20 feet wide. It illuminated the hills and evergreens as far as Zoe could see. She shook her head in disbelief. "I'm keeping you," she said. 17. X followed Zoe over a snowy rise. The drifts were deep, and their progress was slow. He could hear her just ahead of him, panting and swearing. Occasionally, she would turn back and say, We're almost there. Or, okay, I was lying, now we're almost there. He himself did not speak. He couldn't shake the image of Zoe's father from his brain. He kept picturing the man's hand extended toward him, reddened and chapped from the cold, and waiting to be shaken. He kept picturing his eyes, Jonah's eyes. There was nothing but snow in every direction. He'd had enough of the snow. Finally, they staggered down the other side of the rise. At the bottom, there was a fence and a hill of rocks, on which stood a small cross and a stone Buddha. X had seen souls arrive in the lowlands with the same images around their necks. Just as he'd seen necklaces with golden stars and crescent moons. New souls never fought so hard as when the guards tried to steal them away. Without a word, Zoe began scaling the fence. It rattled as she climbed, and X felt a wave of concern. He wondered if he should stop her, but then he remembered that one of the things he loved most about her was that no one could ever stop her. Zoe dropped down on the other side of the fence and landed with a deep, muffled thud. She turned to X. "This is Black Teardrop," she said. "This is my father's cave. This is where he died." X's heart lurched. This was the moment to tell her that her father was still alive. This was the moment. He couldn't do it. The words wouldn't come. He wanted to give Zoe one more minute of happiness, of innocence, of not knowing. Did he have to tell her the truth? What if he didn't? He could take her father's soul to the lowlands and be free. And Zoe could keep believing that her father had died in a cave. She didn't have to know about her father's sins. She didn't have to know that he had run from his past as long as he could, or that when it finally caught up with him, he'd chosen the most cowardly course, faking his own death and leaving her and Jonah and their mother to cry their hearts out by a tree in the backyard. Zoe could have a whole lifetime of not knowing. She was staring at him. Her eyes were teary. He had to say something. "Show me the cave," he said. He leaped over the fence and joined Zoe. There were already tracks, half buried in the snow. They followed them up to the cave, then climbed to where the statue and the cross sat on the ledge. "I feel bad for these guys standing out here in the cold," said Zoe. X did not reply. His mind and heart were aching. "But I guess Jesus and Buddha can handle a little snow," she said. She sat down on the rocks, surrounded by the light that X had summoned up. She began talking, shyly at first. She told him about the cave and about her father. X found it hard to concentrate on the exact words. They blew by him like a wind. She said that she'd gone caving the day before. She said that there was a moment during the descent where she suddenly knew what her dad had gone through when he died. Not just the mechanics of it, but the terror, too. She said she'd felt the rope wind around his throat, as if it were her own throat. She'd seen the flame on his headlamp singe the rope, then burn through it as he struggled. She'd imagined the fall, the sudden heart-in-your-mouth naked panic of it, as if the cave were devouring her instead. She paused. She apologized for talking so much. She looked at him, desperate for him to speak. But still, X said nothing. And every second that he said nothing felt like a lie. Could he lie to her for the rest of their lives? And would the two of them be able to build anything on top of the lie and still call it love? Zoe pointed at the statues. She said her mom had left them there. She'd been shocked when she found them. She'd thought that her mother hated her father, but clearly she hadn't been able to cut him out of her heart. None of them had. Jonah, she said, was a legit basket case. She picked up the piece of bark from the ledge above the Buddha and the cross. "See this?" she said. "I will come back. I carved that for my dad. I wanted him to know we're not gonna just leave him here." X was startled by the words. "What do you mean?" he said. "What do you mean you're not gonna just leave him here?" "We're gonna come back and get him," said Zoe. He saw the seriousness in her eyes. No one could ever stop Zoe. This time, he thought it not with a pang of fondness, but of dread. "I'm sorry I'm babbling, but I'm babbling because you aren't talking," she said. "Why aren't you talking? You must have a million things to say."
"I do," said X miserably. "And yet, no way to say them."
Zoe climbed down from the rocks. She took off a glove. She laid her palm against the side of his face. "Try," she said. "Try just telling me one thing." X took her hand from his cheek. The softness of her hand, the kindness of the gesture, only hurt him.
"You cannot go into this cave," he said.
"I'm not going to," she said. "The police are."
"They cannot go either," he said,
growing heated.
"You must trust me. You must stop them. No one must enter this cave. Let them seal it forever."
Zoe pulled away from him. "Why?" she said. His mind spun in search of an answer. "Why should I stop them?" she said.
"Because I am asking you to, Zoe," he said. "Because I am begging you to. Because everything depends upon it." He was going too far.
He was saying too much.
"Because I will destroy the cave with my own hands before I let anyone venture into it."
Zoe recoiled from him.
"What is wrong with you?" she said. "Why should I stop them? I'm going to keep asking until you answer me, and you know me, I can go all night."
This time, he interrupted her before she could get the question out.
"Nothing but the most desperate pain can be found in that cave," he said. "You might recover from it. But I am not so strong as you, Zoe. I could not bear to watch rags made of your heart."
His tenderness had no effect. "You're not answering me," Zoe said angrily. "Why should I leave my father's body in a hole? He would never have left me. Why shouldn't we go into the cave? Tell me why." X felt the answer fly up his throat, like a sickness.
"Because your father is not there," he said. "And because you are wrong. He did leave you. He left all of you."
Zoe staggered back a step, her face suddenly unrecognizable.
"What are you talking about?"
she said. He stepped toward her. She drew back as if in fear.
"What are you talking about?"
"The Lords gave me one last commission. One last soul I must take if I am to be free," he said.
"I know," she said. "Banger told me."
"The soul they sent me for, Zoe. It was your father," said X. "He is alive. I have seen him."
The color was gone from Zoe's face now. He reached for her again. She wouldn't let him touch her.
You've seen my father?"
"In Canada," he said. "On a barren coast. Not so many hours ago."
Zoe shook her head.
"It couldn't have been my father," she said. "Tell me how you knew. Tell me exactly what he said."
"We spoke but little," said X. "He gave off a strong scent of fish. He begged my pardon for it. He said he had been fishing through the ice."
Zoe's eyes suddenly flared with hope.
"My father didn't fish,"
she said. He didn't know how. If he knew how, I would know how. He would have taught me.
It may be that he has learned, X said gently. This is a man who fled his life, who shed even his name. I suspect he lives on the margins and in the shadows now. He calls himself Leo Wrigley.
The last detail seemed to wound Zoe more than anything that had come before.
We used to have a cat named Wrigley, she said,
her voice breaking.
And Leo is... It's Jonah's middle name.
She was quiet a moment.
What else did he say? This is insane!
X searched his mind. He had spent so few moments with the man, and he had been in such a tortured state.
He praised the rock we were sheltered under, he said. He said it was sandstone, and remarked on how freaking awesome it was.
I grieve to tell you, Zoe, but it was your father.
Zoe burst into sobs. He reached out to her again, and yet again she shrank away. Not being able to touch her was excruciating. X clenched his hands so tightly that his nails drew blood.
Did you take him?
Said Zoe.
Did you take my father to the lowlands?
No, Zoe, said X. How could I?
He sits on that beach still for all I know.
What did my father do?
She said.
What were his crimes?
Do not ask me, said X. Spare yourself something.
Zoe rubbed frenziedly at her eyes, but the tears kept coming.
I need to know at least a little, she said. I mean, it was bad, what he did? Bad like you're used to?
X shivered. Every word she spoke pierced him, but the words he was forced to speak in return were worse somehow, because they pierced her.
Much of it occurred in his youth, he said.
Yet, Zoe could not wait for him to complete the thought.
Yet what?
She said.
Yet I have taken souls for less, he said.
There was blood on his hands when he was still a young man, and there is fresh blood on them today. He watched as the last remnants of hope drained out of Zoe.
What happens now?
She said. He reached out to her a final time, and this time she let him hold her.
I regret this answer above all others, he said. What happens now is for you to decide. Either your father goes free, or I do.
X waited for what felt like years for Zoe to speak.
Take me to him, she said finally.
Take me to my father. Her voice sounded so hard now. X turned from her. He stared down at the feeble metal fence, which shook and rattled in the wind.
Please, she added. Or I'll go myself. I'll find a way, you know I will.
Yet what will you say to him, Zoe? X said.
He did not look back at her.
He couldn't.
And what will you have me do? Will you ask me to stop your own father's breath? Will you watch as I circle his neck with my fingers? And, once I am done, will you ever be able to look at me again?
Zoe was silent a long time.
I don't know, she said.
But I want to see him with my own eyes. I want him to know. I want him to know that I know what he's done. I don't want him thinking he got away with this, not for one more second. She put a hand on X's shoulder.
Will you take me?
She said.
Even if I don't have all the answers yet?
He turned back to her. Her eyes, even in distress, were so familiar. They never failed to unravel him.
You know that I will, he said.
Zoe texted her mother. I'm not going to be home tonight. I'm okay, I promise. Please trust me one more time. She turned off her phone so she wouldn't hear it explode. She nodded to X. She was ready. He picked her up and pulled her to his chest. He did not bother leaping over the fence. He just let out a howl and kicked it down with his boot. He carried her up and over the powdery banks and then down the icy road and wandered through the mountains. The moon had broken through the clouds. The snow gave off a faint blue light. Zoe was silent now, overwhelmed by the shock of it all, he imagined. Her eyes were open, but she appeared to see nothing. He tried to think of a story to tell Zoe as he carried her. He thought that hearing his voice might console her somehow. Talking would never come naturally to him. How many words had he even spoken in his lifetime? And he realized now that he didn't know very many stories, and certainly no pleasant ones. So he told her their story. He began with her knocking him down on the ice. He told her that she'd smelled like the dogs, adding nervously that he meant it as a compliment, that he'd liked it. He told her that he was changed the minute she smashed into him, that by stopping him from taking Stan, she'd woken him up, challenged him not to hate himself, and to think of himself as something more than a killer. Because that's all he was when they met, wasn't it? It didn't matter if you killed only bad men. You were still a killer. Even if Zoe and X had never spoken, never touched, never kissed, he wouldn't have forgotten her. Couldn't have. He'd have guarded the memory of her with two cupped hands, like it was a flame in a draft. Was Zoe listening? He wasn't sure, but he liked telling the story. It soothed him. He told her about how they'd argued when her family found him in agony in the garage, how he'd begged her to abandon him, even though he was praying that she wouldn't. He described riding to the house in Jonah's sled and sleeping in a bed shaped like a fat insect. Why was it shaped like an insect? He'd worried it was a stupid question, so he had never asked. X told her how he used to lie waiting for her to fall asleep. He told her that she snored just the tiniest bit. But maybe he shouldn't have said that. He changed the subject. He talked about Jonah. He said he could feel his hard little hugs even now. He confessed that when he was tiptoeing out of the room one night, he'd stepped on one of Jonah's toy animals and broken its horns. How ashamed he'd been. He'd meant to apologize, but never did. He didn't know what kind of animal it was. It had horns, so maybe it was a monkey? Zoe's lips twitched at this last detail. She nearly smiled. She was listening, and she looked warm in his arms. X talked for another hour. They were out of the mountains now. They were on a road lined with evergreens. X saw poles strung with wires. He felt civilization rising up to greet them. Still, it would take them ages to reach her father. As if she'd read his thoughts, Zoe stirred in his arms and spoke. "Why are you walking?" she said. Her voice was flat and tuneless, but he was grateful to hear it. "Why aren't we zooming, or whatever you call it?" she added. "I have seen the effect that zooming produces in you," said X. "So zooming must be our last resort. In truth, I am happy to walk. For the more slowly we go, the longer I can hold you." Zoe was quiet a moment. "Thank you," she said softly. "But it's okay to zoom." After another silence, she added, "Do you really call it zooming?" "I was just guessing." "No, we don't call it that," said X. Fearing that he'd been unkind, he quickly added, "But we certainly can." Satisfied, Zoe withdrew into her thoughts again. The moon,
appearing to follow her cue, ducked behind the clouds once more. Even to X, the darkness was alarming. 18. The instant Zoe awoke, she knew her father was near. She lay in a bare wooden hut on a beach in what she guessed was British Columbia, the ocean crashing and sighing on every side of her. She could feel her own version of the trembling spreading beneath her skin. Her heart, her nerves, her lungs, everything in her body told her how close her father was. X was not beside her. Zoe remembered only flashes from the night before. The hut had been locked, and X had smashed his fist through the door so they could get in. He'd warmed the place by simply rubbing his hands together. But still, they'd slept huddled against each other, as if they were in danger of freezing. X had made a pillow for her out of his coat. An hour ago. Could it have been more? She wasn't sure. X had opened the door, and a wedge of sunlight had fallen across her face. She'd woken briefly. He told her he'd be back. He told her to keep sleeping. It was such a lovely thing to be told. Keep sleeping. Zoe's mind must have churned as she slept because she woke up knowing exactly what she and X had to do about her father. The answer had been sitting in her brain for hours, waiting for her to awake. She knew X wouldn't like it. She'd have to find the right time and the right way to tell him. She sat up and leaned back against the wall. The place was one of those changing room huts that families rented on the beach during the summer. It was tiny. There were hooks for clothes and rough wooden drawers. Otherwise, the inside of the hut was stark, white, and empty. Zoe could hear the wind whistling outside. When she peered through the slats in the wall, she saw a line of snow-covered trees leaning almost horizontally over the edge of the cliffs. She pulled her phone from her pocket. It was 8 a.m. There was a string of texts from her mother, beginning with one that read, "What do you mean you won't be home?" There was also one from Dallas. "Do you really like the quilt I got you? I got a gift receipt just in case." And one from Val. "Why isn't your butt at school? Is your butt malfunctioning?" To Dallas, she texted, "I love the quilt. Shut up, go away." To Val, she wrote, "Long story. Who told you about my butt?" To her mother, well, what could she say? Zoe stared down at the phone and began typing. "I'm in Canada, I think."
"Canada? You think?"
"Road trip. Hard to explain. I will be home soon. Please don't freak."
"Way past freaked. Who are you with?"
Dot, dot, dot.
"Who are you with?"
Dot, dot, dot.
"Zoe, are you there?"
"I'm with X." Zoe couldn't explain the situation. Not in the state she was in. For all she knew, X was on his way back with her father right this minute. She stuffed the phone in her pocket, put on X's coat, and pushed open the door. The hut turned out to be on stilts, and, because the tide was high, standing in 3 feet of frigid water. The outside walls were bright red. On the other side of it, there were identical huts, painted yellow and powder blue. Zoe had planned to walk on the beach, but the ladder at her feet was so swamped with water it had begun to float. She might as well have been on a houseboat. Zoe sat in the doorway, the cold sun on her face, the wind playing games with her hair. She tried not to think about her mother. Her mom would understand. Eventually. She tried not to think about her father. When she did think of him, all that came to her was a rage so dark, it was like a storm front. Maybe that was for the best. She was going to need her anger. Zoe caught sight of X coming down the beach. He waded toward her through the water, his pants soaked, his shirt flapping against his chest like a sail in the wind. He was carrying 2 plastic bags. When he noticed her perched in the doorway of the hut, he lifted the bags high and shouted the most surprising thing she'd ever heard him say. "Breakfast!" X climbed the ladder and handed Zoe the bags. For a moment, he stood in the doorway, wringing the cold salt water out of his pants. His face was flushed from the wind. He looked weirdly happy. Giddy, almost. Zoe had seen him twirl Stan like a baton. She had seen him stagger into the ice storm to confront a lord. But she had never seen him as proud of anything as he was of having successfully ordered takeout. She watched as X converted his coat into a picnic blanket. She made a mental note to get the thing dry-cleaned and unpacked the bags. They held 3 styrofoam containers, which were still so warm that they perspired slightly. There were also a bizarre number of cans. A Canada Dry Ginger Ale, a Big 8 Cola, a Jolt Cola, an RC Cola, a tomato juice, and a Diet Dr. Pepper. "I demand that you explain this amazing triumph," said Zoe. X looked at her sheepishly. "Surely there are more important matters before us?" he said. "I can't think of any," she said. X seemed unconvinced, so she added, "I need to hear something happy. Everything else is too awful. Let's just talk about food for a little while. Please?" He said he'd taken the money from Zoe's pockets as she slept. He still felt bad about it. Then wandered along the road until he discovered a restaurant. It was a bright, loud place, full of laughter and clinking glass. Everyone swiveled toward him when he walked in. Partly, he supposed, because he wasn't wearing a coat, and his hair was not quite presentable. Zoe snuck a look at X's hair and smiled. It pointed in every direction like a sign at an intersection. X said that he'd panicked as the diners inspected him. He thought of fleeing, but a woman with bright yellow hair and a pencil welcomed him and set him at ease. X pretended he couldn't speak English. The yellow-haired woman found this endearing. She toured the establishment with him, miming that he should look at everyone's plates and point to what he wanted. "Oh my God, she was flirting with you," Zoe interrupted. "I may have to go back and have a talk with her." X had been telling his story excitedly, breathlessly almost. He stumbled to a stop now, confused by Zoe's comment. "Never mind," she said. "Keep going. This is my favorite story of all time." All the diners, X said, wanted him to choose their food. It became a game. They lifted their plates to him as he passed, hoping for his approval. Whenever he selected something, a cheer would go up, and the waitress would scribble on her little rectangle of paper. His only difficulty had been choosing the drinks, because he couldn't see what was inside the cans. He hoped she found something here acceptable. She assured him that she did. She took the ginger ale for herself, and, when he reached for the Jolt Cola, guided him toward the tomato juice instead, saying, "I think you're jacked up enough already." Next came the ceremonial opening of the styrofoam boxes. X watched as Zoe gazed inside them. He looked so nervous that it would have moved her to tears if she hadn't been starving. In the first box, there were 2 thick, buttered slices of French toast, each with a whorl of cinnamon in the center, and a side of wavy, gleaming bacon. In the second, there was a golden mound of onion rings and a small container of blue cheese dressing. In the third, there was a slice of molten chocolate cake so enormous that an elastic band had been stretched around the box to keep it safely inside. X stared at Zoe, desperate for a verdict. "I do not pretend to know what constitutes a meal," he said. She leaned over the boxes, put a hand behind his neck, and pulled him close for a kiss. "These are the best foods on Earth," she said.
"How did you know?"
X beamed.
"Should we begin with this?"
he said, pointing to the chocolate cake.
"Obviously," said Zoe.
The waitress had forgotten to give them silverware, or paper plates or napkins, so they ate with their hands. They ate until there was nothing left but crumbs. They ate until their hands, their shirts, their faces, somehow even their necks, were sticky with grease and frosting. They ate until the tide had receded, until the sun sat overhead, until X was so high on syrup and cake that he was hopping jubilantly around the tiny hut and doing impressions of Ripper, Dervish, and the Russian guard. Zoe laughed, remembering Banger and all his candy bars. "Come to me, ye men of the lowlands," she thought, "and I shall give you sugar, and maybe even caffeine." Seeing X so happy calmed everything inside her. She wouldn't have thought it possible. She had gotten so used to pain and to loss and to impossible questions. And yet right here in front of her was love, was hope, was an answer. After the inevitable sugar crash, X slept for hours, his long legs sticking out of the hut. Zoe watched him every moment, just as he had watched over her all night. Her father had abandoned her, but X never would. Not willingly. She smoothed his hair as best she could with her hands. She traced the tattoos on his arms with her fingers. The giraffe, the monkey, a knife, a tree, a band of stars. She worried that it was wrong to touch him while he slept. But she couldn't help herself. And anyway, she could have sworn that his breathing deepened whenever her skin touched his. She pressed her lips to the insides of his wrists and the soft hollow at the base of his throat. She kissed his fingers one by one and took them into her mouth. She did it all softly so he wouldn't wake. Her face flushed with heat. Everything tasted of maple syrup. They were so close to Zoe's father that the trembling returned as X slept. Being with Zoe always quieted his body, but never cured it altogether. X's skin became damp and feverish. Zoe opened his shirt wide to let the air cool him, allowing herself the brief pleasure of placing her palm against his chest and feeling his heart pump beneath her hand. As the hours passed, the sickness grew stronger. X shook and thrashed his head in his sleep. Zoe's phone trilled in her coat. The screen said, "Me," was calling. Jonah had programmed himself in. She stepped down the rickety ladder so X wouldn't wake, and balanced on one of the narrow rungs. Birds that had drifted in from the water were tracing circles around her. The waves roiled just below her feet. Jonah began talking before she'd even said hello.
"Why aren't you here?"
he said.
"Where are you? What are you doing?"
Zoe answered the least complicated of the questions. "I'm looking at the ocean," she said.
"Where is there an ocean?" said Jonah suspiciously. "We don't have an ocean."
"I'll tell you everything when I see you, Bug," she said. "I can't talk right now."
"Don't hang up," he said. "If you hang up, I will call back 16 times. You have to come home, Zoe, right now. Mom said you'll come home when you're ready, but I'm ready right now."
"I can't come yet," she said.
"Soon." "I'm all by myself," he said.
"Wait," she said.
"Why?"
Jonah gave an exasperated grunt, then poured out the following without pausing to breathe. Rufus is late because he got in an accident. The bear fell off his van, I guess, and Mom couldn't wait because she had to go to work, and now I'm alone, and I hate it, and it's scary. And why do you have to look at the ocean when we have stuff right here you can look at? It took 5 minutes to get him off the phone. Zoe pocketed her cell and climbed the ladder. The birds sensed food now. Zoe eyed them anxiously. Their bodies, their bills, their moist little eyes. Everything was jet black, except for their wings, which had streaks of white, and their legs and feet, which were bright red and reminded her, strangely, of the bottoms of expensive shoes. She ducked into the hut and began bundling up the bags. She wasn't fast enough. One of the birds dove through the door. The instant it was in the hut, it freaked out. It banged against the ceiling and walls, trying to escape. Zoe saw X register the noise in his sleep. She was desperate for him to rest and wanted to protect him like he had protected her. But she just couldn't drive the bird out. She felt sure it'd been sent to remind them that there could be no sleeping, no touching, no forgetting, no relief, while the lowlands were watching. Zoe finally trapped the bird in X's coat. She carried it to the door. She released it, watched it disappear over the waves, then sank down in the doorway. The agitation had pushed her over the edge. X, who'd slept through all the commotion, woke up the instant she began crying. She found that moving somehow, that he could ignore anything but her. He touched her shoulder. "I dreamed you were kissing me," he said. "I dreamed you were kissing my fingers, my hands, my throat." Zoe turned and smiled guiltily. "Weird," she said. She dried her eyes on her sleeves, embarrassed that something as random as a bird had upset her. "Can you stand?" she said. He nodded and stood. "Can you walk?" she said. He nodded again. "It's time to find my father," she said. "I've made a decision." X nodded a third time and took his coat from her. Even the simple act of pulling it over his shoulders seemed to exhaust him. "What is your decision?" he said. "I must know." Zoe stood now too. The birds were still circling the hut. "The Lords gave you his name to punish us, right?" she said. "To punish me," said X. "You have done nothing to chastise yourself. I beg you not to imagine otherwise." "Why do they want to punish you?" said Zoe. "Because you're innocent, and they're not? Is that what it is? They're just assholes?" "You may think me innocent," said X, "but they do not. They think me arrogant and vain, for I have put myself above them. I have put you above them. Now they mean to show me how weak I truly am."
"Because they don't think you can do it?" said Zoe.
"They don't think you can take my father, no matter what evil crap he's done? They think you'd rather go back to the lowlands forever than do something that would hurt me?"
"And I fear they are correct," said X.
Zoe opened the door and began descending the ladder again. "They are not correct," she said. "You are going to take my father, and you are going to come back to me. Not just because he deserves to be punished, but because, even if you're a dork and don't believe it, you deserve to be free." They headed up the beach to the road, the rocks sliding and clacking under their feet. It was afternoon now. Zoe knew it wouldn't stay light for long. They walked half a mile without speaking, and she was grateful for the silence. If they talked, they'd have to talk about the fact that X was growing sicker by the minute, that he was tripping over his feet and hanging on to Zoe for support. She had never seen him so weak. Being close to her was not helping him now. Once again,
Zoe's body told her that her father was near, just as X's body told him. She saw omens and metaphors everywhere. It wasn't just the dark birds back at the beach. It was the frigid wind, which pushed at their backs as if goading them on. It was the black road, which was riven down the middle with cracks, as if something was trying to break out of the earth. After 10 minutes, X and Zoe passed a junky-looking truck parked on the shoulder of the road. There was a path just ahead. X led Zoe to it, and they entered the dense, snowy forest. It was like the woods near her house. Every awful detail from the day she had chased Jonah and the dogs came back to her unbidden. Everything about Bert and Betty, the fireplace poker, and the hole in the ice. And here she was preparing to collide with another soul marked for the lowlands. Zoe looped her arm through X's. She didn't know if she could survive another day like that. The forest was hushed, except for the creaking of the trees. Some of the firs were so deeply encased in snow that Zoe couldn't see the slightest hint of green. They leaned over in every direction, giant hooded figures bowing to each other. Snow ghosts, she'd heard them called. Zoe thought of how much she'd once loved the woods. She remembered running through them in summer, patches of sunlight bright on her skin. She remembered snowshoeing through them on days so crazily cold that it hurt to breathe. She remembered Jonah's laughter, lighting them up, no matter the season. But too much had happened. She feared forests would always feel hostile now, claustrophobic somehow, as if the trees were waiting for her to look away so they could rush at her from all sides. X's fever was spiking. When they came to a larch that had fallen across the path, Zoe cleared some snow from the trunk and snapped off a half-dozen spindly branches. She helped him sit. "How much farther?" she said. She was desperate to get there, and desperate not to.
"Perhaps a half mile," said X,
each word draining him even more. He pointed at the path ahead of them, which was tamped down and streaked with mud.
"These tracks," he said, "are your father's."
Zoe's stomach did its tightening thing, where it felt like someone was turning a wheel. This time, it felt as if her skin was caught in the gears.
"My throat is in flames," he said. "I feel as if glowing coals were being shoveled down it. Still, there is counsel I would give you, if you will hear it."
"Of course," she said. She sat down next to him on the trunk.
"It is not that your father is an evil man," said X,
his voice a husk.
"It is that he is a weak one. You will know it the moment your eyes encounter him."
He paused, collecting his energy.
"You will also know that he loves you," he said. "We are not slaying a dragon today, Zoe. Just putting a wounded animal to rest. You will find it harder than you imagine. I have never known my parents, and it seems that I never will. So perhaps I have no right to advise you. However, if you find that you pity your father, you need only look at me, and I will know. And I will not take him."
"Stop it," said Zoe. "Just stop it. He doesn't love anybody but himself. I understand that now. You are going to be free. Do I seem like somebody who changes her mind?" They walked for what felt like much more than half a mile. Maybe it was because the woods were strange. Maybe it was because Zoe was going to see her father. She was so tense now, so alert, that time seemed to crack open and expand just to maximize her anguish. She was going to see her father. It seemed like such an innocent statement, except that he was supposed to be dead. Hadn't she prayed for his soul at the cave? Yet, somehow, her father was still alive. He was up ahead through the trees, doing God only knew what, pretending to have no wife, no children, no Zoe, no Jonah, no past. Did they mean so little to him? Rage seeped through her. She knew one thing she'd tell her father for sure. It was a good thing he'd gotten rid of his name, because where he was going, they wouldn't let him keep it anyway. A squirrel jumped into a tree as they passed, sending snow down the back of Zoe's neck. She shivered as it melted on her skin. They couldn't be more than a quarter mile away now. But a quarter mile from what? Knowing her father, he could be living in a house, a cave, an igloo, anything. She peered through the trees. There was no plume of smoke, no sign of life at all. Suddenly, her phone trilled again. "Me," it said. "Bug, I can't talk," she said, hoping to preempt another tirade. "Why are you looking at an ocean?" said Jonah, his voice more desperate than before. "You don't even like oceans. You have to come home, Zoe. Right now, right now, right now. I am still alone, and now it's raining or snowing, I can't tell which. But it's creepy and loud, and even Spock and Uhura are mad at you because I told them where you were." Zoe only half listened. The forest thinned out up ahead. The light grew stronger. X leaned close and whispered,
"We will soon be within sight of your father."
Zoe nodded and squeezed his hand. "I gotta go, Bug," she said into the phone. "I'm sorry. I love you."
"No, Zoe, no," he said. "If you hang up, I will call back. I will call back 32 times.
"Bug, stop," she said. "I promise to call you back and make you giggle, okay? I will do whatever it takes. I will tickle you over the phone if I have to."
"That's not even possible, obviously," he said. "Unless I, like, put the phone in my armpit, and probably not even then."
She felt guilty for hanging up. Jonah had suffered even more than she had. If she'd cried over her father 100 times, he had cried 1,000. His eyes had gotten so puffy with tears that he could hardly see, and he'd let out wails that she would never forget. There were only 100 yards of forest left. They could see something through the trees. A field of snow, maybe? A gray sky hung above it. Zoe took X's arm, and they followed the path as it snaked through the firs. Anger and fear fought for her attention. The woods were so quiet, it was as if the silence, rather than being passive and still, were a living thing that devoured all sounds. It was like the snow. It buried everything. Just ahead, 2 snow ghosts leaned toward each other, weary under their heavy white coats. They formed a narrow archway, an exit out of the woods, an entrance to whatever it was that awaited them. Zoe peered between the trees. In the distance, she could see a dark smudge on the snow. A cabin, maybe? 100 feet, and they'd be out of the forest. She needed this to be over, but she kept slowing down. She couldn't help it. She kept thinking of that day with Stan. She thought of Spock and Uhura huddled on top of Jonah in the snow, saving his life. She thought of Stan throwing Spock into the freezing water and holding him down with his foot. She thought of X doing the same to Stan, the boot on Stan's head, the frigid water lapping into his mouth. The images were carved into her. They were her tattoos. They ducked under the snowy archway. The branches groaned above them. Zoe didn't trust them to hold. She held her breath, waiting for snow to bury them. She thought of the bird that had flown in for their breakfast. But now, instead of being trapped inside the hut, it was trapped inside her. She felt its wings banging and thumping in her rib cage. "I want to talk to my father alone first," said Zoe. X began to object. She shook her head to silence him. "Just give me a few minutes," she said. "Then you can come and take him. I want him to know what he's done to us." X agreed reluctantly. "I will watch from the trees," he said. "If you want me, I will be at your side before you can even finish the thought." They plunged out of the archway. The forest fell away, and the world rushed out in every direction. The smudge they had seen was not a cabin, and it did not stand on a plain. It was a dingy shed, smaller even than the hut on the beach. It stood on a frozen lake. Zoe felt the bird squeeze up into her throat, scratching and choking her, and desperate to get out. In front of them, a small hill ran down toward the lake. They were out in the open now. If Zoe's father was in the shed, he might see her at any moment. She thought of hiding. But there were no snowbanks or bushes or rocks. And anyway, she was paralyzed. She couldn't convince her body to move. The door of the shed swung open. The sound reached her an instant later, like an echo. It was her father. It was her father. He was skinnier than she remembered, and she didn't recognize his tattered clothes. But she knew the goofy way he walked, the way his head bobbed, the way his lanky arms swung at his sides. He carried a fishing pole. She watched as he loped around, his eyes cast downward to inspect the frozen lake. It took her a moment to understand, to see what he saw. And then the bird in her throat let out a screech so sudden and alien that it shocked even her. X clasped her hand. Her father turned and saw them. There were a dozen holes in the ice. 19. X watched as Zoe hiked down the hill. Her arms were crossed tightly around her chest. She was staring straight at her father, refusing to let him look away. X heard noises behind him in the woods. Something was crunching through the snow. He assumed it was an animal and did not turn. He would not take his eyes off Zoe. The trembling made it almost unbearable for X to be so close to his prey. His fever burned beneath his skin. His hands had a will of their own, and began to shake at his sides. They were desperate to act, to kill, even if X was repulsed by the thought. He reminded himself that killing this one last soul would set him free. But freedom was too strange and vast an idea to hold for more than an instant, and it was followed by a crushing guilt. Why must being with Zoe come at another soul's expense? And why must that soul be her father? The Lords had made even freedom seem a sin. He told himself not to think of his bounty as Zoe's father, but rather as a faceless, nameless creature to be disposed of. A 16th skull to hang around his neck, no different from the 15 others. A branch snapped behind him. It was a tiny sound, but X was so agitated it assaulted his ears. Still, he refused to turn. Zoe was halfway down the hill now, halfway to her father. Before X met her, he'd wrenched souls from the overworld without so much complaining from his conscience. He used to tell himself that he hated it, but when the time came, he always managed to summon up enough fury to strike his target down. He wondered if he'd been such a fierce bounty hunter because he had the blood of a lord in his veins, or because he'd never lived a true life and never known the value of a soul. The noises returned. It was not an animal behind him, he knew that now. It was a human being. A hiker, perhaps. Or a hunter. X could hear the man's breath. He could not have someone stumbling on the scene about to unfold. He forced himself